Hello, and welcome to the AMA's Steps Forward podcast series. We'll hear from healthcare leaders nationwide about real-world solutions to the challenges that practices are confronting today. Solutions that help put the joy back into medicine. AMA's Steps Forward program is open access and free to all at stepsforward.org.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the AMA Steps Forward podcast series. I'm Dr. Margaret Lozovatsky, Vice President of Digital Health Innovations here at the AMA, and your host for today's episode, where we'll be discussing AI governance. This is our second podcast on this topic as we highlight organizations that are finding ways to successfully navigate the evolving landscape of augmented intelligence. As healthcare organizations increasingly adopt AI in various ways, establishing clear governance and oversight structures has never been more important. To support this effort, the AMA has developed a Steps Forward toolkit on AI governance, which you can find in the description of today's episode, that provides practical guidance on building a strong governance framework. The toolkit outlines key steps for success, including establishing leadership and structure, aligning AI initiatives with strategic goals, developing policy, ensuring proper training and education, as well as continuously evaluating the impact of AI. As part of this toolkit, we are highlighting a few healthcare organizations that have had success in AI adoption and implementation. Joining us to discuss this topic for our second success story is Dr. Alvin Liu, endowed professor and inaugural director of the James P. Gills Jr. MD and Heather Gills Artificial Intelligence Innovation Center at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Thank you for being here today, Dr. Liu.
Sure thing. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Alvin Liu. I was born in Hong Kong and I came to the US as a teenager to attend Phillips Exeter Academy. After that, I did a double major in economics and biology at Cornell. And then I went to medical school at Columbia University in New York. I've completed both my ophthalmology residency and retina fellowship at Johns Hopkins. And after that, I stayed on as faculty member. I am a practicing retinal surgeon, and outside of my clinical work, my career is completely focused in AI in several different areas. First, I am the inaugural director of the Gills AI Center, which is the first endowed AI center at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine that was made possible recently by a very generous donation of $10 million by Dr. Gills. Second, in my research work, I am involved in the development of clinical AI tools. Third, I've had extensive experience in deploying AI tools across the health systems for both clinical and operational purposes, such as autonomous AI for diabetic retinopathy screening in the primary care setting, and also generative AI for revenue cycle management. And last but not least, I'm heavily involved in the AI governance structure within Johns Hopkins Medicine, which I'm sure we're going to spend more time talking about.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing your impressive background. Jumping right into our conversation on AI governance, can you describe Johns Hopkins Medicine's journey with AI governance? What are you prioritizing? How are you thinking about augmented intelligence?
Sure. So the journey of health AI governance for Johns Hopkins started relatively recently. So about a year ago, back in 2024, the executive leadership team at Johns Hopkins decided to charter a task force to develop an implementation strategy that ensures our organization become a global leader in the responsible use of AI. And a key tenet of this whole strategy is such that this responsible AI program should be clinically led, meaning physicians like myself will and should play a major role. This particular task force came up with 7 core principles that are very important for responsible AI, including fairness, transparency, accountability, ethical data use, safety, evidence-based effectiveness, and social benefits. And from these 7 core principles, we identified several implementation plans. And a key implementation plan is to establish a governance process and framework that will be integrated with existing governance structures. And as a result, an AI oversight team was created. This team has 8 people in it. It is a leadership team drawn from across the health system and School of Medicine, and I'm one of the 8 people. We have purview over all things AI related across the health system in the imaging, clinical, and operational domains.
Fantastic. Well, you had mentioned that this started with your executive team's engagement. Can you talk a little bit more about the role of your executive team and your CEO in championing this AI governance?
Definitely. So as I mentioned, the genesis of the whole AI governance structure really came from a directive from the highest level that created responsible AI workforce. Now that we're in the process of actually doing AI governance, there are a couple of other areas where leadership is still heavily involved. Number one, the AI oversight team, as I mentioned, there are 8 people. I'm one of them. We report to the CMIO. And second is the involvement of Johns Hopkins Medicine International. So Johns Hopkins Medicine International, its mission is to take the Johns Hopkins Medicine mission beyond our borders to help raise the standard of care around the world. And specifically, we are working to develop an educational and consulting framework for us to export our expertise and experience in AI governance and work with our international partners on this front.
Fantastic. And thank you for highlighting the importance of engagement from the executive team and leadership in helping to support this work. A big question that we hear is around liability and risk. How are you handling these risks, such as data privacy, algorithm bias, liability at Johns Hopkins and within your current framework for governance?
We agree that data privacy is a big and important issue that should be considered because without data, there will be no AI. So when it comes to data privacy, our leadership has invested significant resources into our IT infrastructure that is specifically geared towards big data storage and analysis and AI model training and testing. Essentially, right now, all AI-related research activities will have to be conducted within these secure IT infrastructure that is managed centrally. In terms of bias, liability, and engagement with end users, these are also key areas of considerations that are already built into our AI governance workflow whenever we interact with an AI vendor. And I'm happy to give you a more specific example of how these principles and considerations will be incorporated whenever we interact with an AI vendor.
Yeah, I think that that's fantastic and really appreciate that you had started with sharing that this work is very clinically led at your organization. And as a practicing physician, I really appreciate the fact that you guys are thinking about it from that perspective. And because of the risks that you mentioned, and it sounds like you've really handled the governance model to address them, we know that sometimes there can be challenges with getting trust from our clinicians. So maybe you can share an example or just an overarching approach to how to engage your clinicians and how to ensure that there's trust in these products.
Definitely. And I'm going to give you a specific example for how we as a health system will interact with a clinical AI vendor. So let's say a particular vendor has a clinical AI product and they want to interact or sell to Johns Hopkins Medicine. Then first, the AI vendor will have to find an internal Hopkins partner as the sponsor. And oftentimes, this sponsor could be a business owner or a clinician who is particularly passionate or knowledgeable about that clinical domain. Once the vendor identifies an internal Hopkins partner, then an intake process will be initiated to go over several questions, such as what clinical or operational problem they are trying to solve, how will the AI system help solve that problem, what actions will end users take, and what is the impact on the end user, how will they measure the effectiveness, and what is the return on investment? What steps have been taken to ensure that the AI system is fair and will be used ethically? And we also will be requesting a model card and a data card from the AI vendor. Once this intake process is completed and the answers to the questions that I just listed are provided for, then the whole application will go to one of the 3 subcommittees. And the 3 subcommittees we have are imaging, clinical, and operational subcommittees. Once the application gets assigned to a particular subcommittee, then a reviewer will be assigned to evaluate the technology using a standardized rubric. And within this rubric, there are several questions that are particularly important related to the concepts that we just talked about. For example, we would like to know who are the users of the AI system, whether it's a patient, clinician, or someone else, and what are the outputs of the AI system, what actions would the end users take, and what is the impact of this new tool on these users. Another question that is also important is, what are the metrics for effectiveness, and how will the team measure them? And third but not least, what are the steps that have been taken to ensure that the AI system is fair and will be used ethically? And the reviewer from that subcommittee will grade this application according to the questions that I just listed. And then once the case is ready, it will be presented to the entire subcommittee for a vote and discussion. And after the decision is made, we'll then relay the decision back to the vendor and the internal Hopkins sponsor for that particular vendor. As you can imagine, sometimes we can go back and forth a few times. Sometimes there's missing information that we would like to get access to. So this is just a start for us to really evaluate these AI vendors in a systematic and standardized fashion. It is an evolving process. We just started doing this and reviewing these cases a few months ago. So I'm sure if we get to chat again in about a year, there will be some changes, but this is certainly a work in progress.
Well, I really appreciate the hard work you guys put in and the very thoughtful approach you have taken to this model. And I think your comment about the fact that this is an iterative process is right on. Technology development is moving so quickly that we all recognize that we're going to need to continue to pivot as we think about our approach to this. So kudos to you for incorporating that into your processes. Let's talk about some success stories. This is my favorite question, and that is to give you an opportunity to share a success story, something that you're particularly proud of in an implementation of an AI tool.
Sure. I can think of two examples that I could give you in terms of AI adoption and implementation within Johns Hopkins Medicine. And the first one belongs to the clinical domain, and the second one belongs to the operational domain. So when it comes to the clinical domain, I think one very promising example is the deployment of autonomous AI for diabetic retinopathy screening in the primary care setting. And this is an area that I personally have been very involved in because I'm a retina specialist myself. So to provide some background, autonomous AI for diabetic retinopathy screening is actually the first fully autonomous AI system in any medical field approved by the FDA. It was first approved in 2018, and a relatively recent article in NEJM AI showed that this particular application is the second most deployed solution in the US right now, in the real world. We started deploying this technology at Johns Hopkins Medicine in 2020, and we have been able to look back on the data and evaluate the impact of this technology on the system and population level. We demonstrated that the deployment of this technology improved access for patients to annual diabetic retinopathy screening, which is a HEDIS measure. And more importantly, the improvement of this access was most pronounced in historically disadvantaged populations, such as African Americans and patients covered under Medicaid. The second example I would like to give is in the operational domain, which is the use of generative AI for revenue cycle management, specifically in prior authorization. As you can imagine, revenue cycle management is a very important process for all health systems. It is extremely complex, and certainly it contains many pain points when it comes to inefficiency. I think RCM is ripe for disruption, especially with the arrival of generative AI that is mostly being implemented in the form of large language models. And large language models are so adaptive, and they're so much better at handling exceptions as compared to the older kind of AI or older kind of AI approaches such as robotic process automation. I think we'll see very rapid adoption of generative AI on the operational side in the next few years. And so far, from Johns Hopkins' perspective, we've seen quite a significant improvement in efficiency when it comes to prior authorization in RCM after applying these Gen AI tools.
That's fantastic. Congratulations. Both of those sound like great success stories. You talked a little bit earlier in the conversation about how you think about success metrics overall as an organization. Maybe you can talk a little bit about the success metrics that you're tracking for both of those projects, and particularly how you are thinking about evaluating adoption and the implementation of the tool itself.
When it comes to thinking about AI adoption and implementation, I think it is useful to think of AI tools in two major buckets. One is the clinical bucket, and one is the operational bucket. I think it's helpful to think about this dichotomy because there are definitely challenges, different challenges, when it comes to the different kinds of application. And I would like to start with the adoption of clinical AI tools first. So I think when it comes to AI tools that are meant for clinical decision making, it is very, very important to engage end users, and in this case, physicians from day one, to ensure that the tool is actually solving a meaningful clinical problem, and also to ensure that we have early product market fit. And I think we see a lot of reports and research papers coming out regarding these AI tools. What people often forget is when it comes to real-world implementation, 80% of the work is actually workflow and logistics. So the second critical factor in successful implementation of clinical AI tools is think about workflow ahead of time, identify the key stakeholders in the entire workflow, and to make sure that everyone who will be involved in the implementation of this clinical AI tool is engaged, and they can give advice on how to most optimally integrate this new tool into a clinical workflow. And last but not least, we also should think about the financial viability of such tool. Oftentimes, a clinical AI tool may sound great on paper. They may even work from a clinical perspective. However, if it does not make sense financially, if there's no viable business model, ultimately, the implementation of this kind of clinical tool will still fail. When it comes to AI tools for operations, I think there are whole different sets of considerations. Overall speaking, these operational AI tools carry much lower risks than clinical ones because they do not involve clinical decision-making. Given that, I think the key to a successful implementation of these operational AI tool is to have rapid iteration, well-thought-out pilot programs, robust change management, and also an urgency to really iterate on this process and this product as fast as possible. Essentially, in my opinion, when it comes to operational AI tools, we should fail fast, pivot fast, and deploy even faster after robust validation.
Great insights. Really appreciate the emphasis on financial viability, on workflow, and the criticality of integrating these tools in a thoughtful manner and understanding the clinical workflow. And of course, as we talked about, the iterative nature of this work and the fact that we do have to pivot very quickly. Are there any other pearls that you would like to share with our audience today?
As you can probably tell, I'm a proponent of AI. I'm very enthusiastic about AI. And overall speaking, I'm very optimistic about how AI can change healthcare and a society overall for the better. I think we can all agree that AI is bound to change healthcare. What is unclear is how exactly it will fit into our current framework, whether these tools will be used mostly in an assistive, autonomous, or an agentic form. So there are still a lot of uncertainties we need to figure out. However, ultimately, AI is just a technology. It is certainly not a silver bullet. I think only a subset of problems should and could be solved by AI. What is key, at least from a health system's perspective, is to assemble a team of decision makers who collectively have deep technical and AI expertise, understand clinical care, and are excellent operators who understand execution. I think overall speaking, We are very early in the AI revolution. We are even earlier when it comes to implementing AI in healthcare. There are a lot of uncertainties. One thing we know for sure is that medicine as we know it now is going to change radically in the next 10 years.
Thank you for sharing those insights. And again, really appreciate your perspective and expertise in this field.
Dr. Alvin Liu, endowed professor and inaugural director of the James P. Gills Jr. MD and Heather Gills Artificial Intelligence Innovation Center at Johns Hopkins Medicine, has been our guest today. Check out the episode description to explore the resources mentioned in today's episode. And until next time, stay well.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the AMA's Steps Forward podcast series. AMA's Steps Forward program is open access and free to all at stepsforward.org. Steps Forward can help put the joy back into medicine by offering real-world solutions to the challenges that your practice is confronting today. We look forward to you joining us next time on the AMA's Steps Forward podcast series, stepsforward.org.